No woman or couple should ever experience a pregnancy loss, yet sadly it happens in 1 in 4 pregnancies. Today, Dr. Morgan and I break down 8 overarching root cause reasons that can lead to one or multiple losses, highlighting many different situations that can occur within those 8 root causes. So this episode feels almost like a masterclass in pregnancy loss. If you are looking for answers beyond what you are getting, or you want to know what to do to potentially prevent a loss along your fertility journey, this episode is for you. Without further ado, let's get started. Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes. Did you know proper hydration and mineral balance are key for hormone health, fertility, and preparing for pregnancy? That's why Dr. Morgan and I love Relight from Redmond, the real salt people, a USA-made electrolyte powder made with unrefined sea salt and 60-plus trace minerals, plus bioavailable potassium, calcium, and 2 forms of magnesium. And yep, they taste amazing. I'm a lemon-lime girl, but Dr. Morgan's all about that strawberry lemonade. Head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER. Stay hydrated, ladies.
Okay, so today we are going to talk about a very tragic and heartbreaking experience that a lot of women have, which is recurrent pregnancy loss or recurrent miscarriage. And, unfortunately, it affects a lot more people than I think people want to talk about or even know, because many people harbor a lot of like shame or just really deep feelings they don't necessarily feel that they want to share in general. So it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you're driving down the road. I think you mentioned this on one of the last podcasts. And if there was a bubble above each car's roof that was like all the things that they were going through, like you just don't really know what's happening behind closed doors for a lot of people, especially if they've struggled with infertility for years. Oftentimes, recurrent pregnancy loss is part of that picture of getting pregnant, losing it at some point. And so there are a lot of different potential causes and reasons for this, which is one of your specialties, Dr. Leah. So this is a big, heavy, fatty episode. It's going to feel like a webinar or a course. So if this is something you're interested in or is personally affecting you, first of all, we are really, really, really sorry that that is happening for you. And we hope that you can find some interesting information that might help you carry a baby to term in the future. So grab a pen and paper and let's just go ahead and get started, because I know we have a lot to cover.
Yeah, we do. So like you said, this is a really heavy topic and, you know, my heart just goes out to anyone who has lost a baby, and it can feel frustrating and isolating, and just know that you're not alone, sadly. But also we're here to share this knowledge because I feel like in my experience with patients, I don't feel like the whole picture is often shared as to what the root causes could be and how we can maybe shift some things. And so in this episode, we're really going to go through the root causes. We don't have a crystal ball. It's not like we can always figure it out. We don't always know why, but we know that there's a lot more investigation and a lot more things to think about when we look at it from the functional and naturopathic medicine lens than just the conventional. So we're going to bring both of those perspectives in, and let's just get started. So the first one is hormones, and hormones are our little messengers in our body. They are responsible for making things happen, and in pregnancy, that's no different. One of the most common reasons for miscarriage that I see, which is really sad, is low progesterone. We also call that a luteal phase defect. So after ovulation, you go into your luteal phase. And halfway through that, you should have the highest amount of progesterone that you have in your cycle. And if that is not high enough, you can't keep an embryo in your uterus. We kind of use the analogy that estrogen builds this pillow for the baby. It builds this nice thick lining in your uterus, but progesterone holds the baby in. And if there's not enough, it might not ever happen, meaning embryo implantation never occurs, or it might be like just enough where it kind of happens, but then it can't stay. So we see this sometimes with missed miscarriages or early losses between like 7 and 9 weeks, because maybe there's a little bit of progesterone, but there's not enough. So the baby just can't stick and stay. And this one's really sad to me because it is preventable if that is the only thing going on. If the embryo is healthy, there's no genetic issues, it's just low progesterone, we can take progesterone vaginally or orally to kind of save baby. However, most people don't go to their OB-GYN until, you know, 10 to 12 weeks. And at this point, you would have already lost the baby if progesterone was the factor. So this is where working with somebody early on or checking your progesterone on your own, even at labs like Ulta Labs, can be really helpful in early pregnancy and getting that support.
Can you give sort of like who would be the people that would be maybe most at risk? If someone's listening to this and they're pregnant for the first time, or they're about to be pregnant for the first time, and they're like, wait, okay, do I have to go do this? Who needs to do this? Like, who would be the ones, if you had to give a couple of categories of people that would be really good idea to check your progesterone potentially before you conceive in that mid-luteal phase, which would be like 1 week, so 7 days after your suspected ovulation time, so you can get it checked there. And if it's pretty solid there, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're probably going to be okay. But if it's low there, mm-hmm. it's suboptimal, then potentially when you do become pregnant, it's a really good idea to, in that very early phase, 5, 6, 7 weeks pregnant, be testing and ensuring that your progesterone is going up, correct?
Yes, absolutely. So I am a fan of every woman testing, but people who would be at higher risk would be someone who's previously been on birth control, because maybe they're not able to really adequately get those hormones on board. Someone who is undernourished. And when I say undernourished, that could be that you're not eating enough. It could be that you're not eating nutrient dense foods. So like you might be eating a bunch of pasta and bread, but you don't have enough vitamins and minerals. So your body perceives that as being undernourished, or you're exercising more than what you're eating. So any of those can lead to a energy deficit or a lack of the nutrients that your body needs. And progesterone very, very, very much needs a well-nourished body. Anyone who's been stressed, stress is a huge killer for progesterone. Same with inflammation. Inflammation is another huge killer for progesterone. And you might not know that you have inflammation, but if you have any symptoms, if you have gut problems or joint pain, or you just feel off, tired, like any honestly symptoms, you know, could be a sign that there's inflammation going on. And then if you have a thyroid condition, and or if you don't know, but you get checked for one, let's say your doctor checks your thyroid, or you do it on your own and it's suboptimal or low, then you definitely want to check your progesterone, because thyroid also really impacts progesterone. But really, you know, anyone who has done that or has had a history of a loss. So like, let's say you've just lost your baby once, and I see this all the time. People come, they're like, I had one miscarriage. We don't want you to just keep trying and have losses to be put into the category of recurrent pregnancy loss before we look at you. I think that's silly, personally. That's how conventional medicine does it. I don't do it that way. I say, you've already had a loss. Let's figure out what's going on. So even if you're not someone who's had recurrent loss, meaning like two or more, you can still do this investigation and look at these things. And absolutely, if you've had a loss in those early weeks especially, do that investigation before you get pregnant again, because you could potentially prevent another loss.
Yeah. And then I want to add on to that too, that if you're currently breastfeeding while you're trying to conceive, that's more my population.
Yes.
But that's a thing. And you can check out our breastfeeding while trying to conceive episode. We also have a whole progesterone episode, which will, both of these will be linked in the show notes. And then what about PCOS? People who had a PCOS, is that relevant for this or not really?
Yes, absolutely. So PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, is another hormonal imbalance, and it can cause all sorts of stuff. It can cause issues with ovulation. Progesterone goes up after ovulation, and it is the outside of the egg that you ovulate. And so if that is unhealthy for some reason, or the hormones aren't signaling correctly, or growth isn't happening properly, which is what happens in PCOS, all of those things can impact progesterone. So absolutely, if you're someone who has the symptoms of PCOS, which we have a whole episode on, you can check on that and look it up yourself if you suspect it, or if you've been diagnosed with it already. Again, yeah, that's another population for sure.
Awesome.
And that leads me into another hormonal imbalance. So we already talked about the thyroid, but thyroid in and of itself can cause loss. if you do not have enough thyroid hormone, you can't grow baby and baby can't survive. And so doesn't mean that if you have hypothyroidism or Hashimoto's, which is the autoimmune condition, that you can't have a baby. Absolutely, you can. You just need to make sure that you have enough thyroid, and getting a full comprehensive panel is important. I have a free guide, a female lab list guide. We'll link in the show notes. So download that and see all of the lists, all the tests that I recommend a woman gets, including that full thyroid panel to make sure, because a lot of people just get TSH run and it's not enough. So looking at that is important. Estrogen, we've already kind of mentioned a little bit, but you can have either excess estrogen, too much, or too little estrogen that can lead to a loss. Sometimes we see this with not enough estrogen. So if you're a person who has light periods, you know, it's like, oh, I only bleed for like one day and it's like barely any. That's not actually good when it comes to fertility. And what that means is that you might not be building up your uterine lining thick enough to hold that baby, to grow an environment that's helpful for that baby. And then sometimes you can have too much estrogen and you have estrogen excess, but oftentimes we actually see this because it's low progesterone. So we have high estrogen and low progesterone, so they kind of go together. It's not like a person who has a lot of estrogen and robust progesterone is not going to have a baby. That's sort of me, my picture. I just have a lot of hormones. But it can play a role if that's what's going on. And then the last major hormone to look at is prolactin. And you had mentioned breastfeeding. Absolutely. If you are a woman who's already had a baby and you're either currently breastfeeding or maybe just not, I mean, you could still have elevated prolactin. However, what women don't realize, so prolactin, for those who don't know, is the hormone that makes breast milk. So it would make sense in a woman who's breastfeeding, who's trying to conceive again, that they would have a hard time potentially, because prolactin blocks ovulation and it can mess up this whole picture. However, women can have high prolactin even who have never been pregnant. And that is something people forget about and don't realize. So it's important to get it checked even if you've never been pregnant and have never breastfed. It can be elevated and that can cause a bunch of issues with ovulation that can also lead to this whole picture that's making it challenging for you to either get pregnant or stay pregnant.
And don't you see elevated prolactin in women who have a long history of birth control use?
Yes, birth control can raise it. Low dopamine in general is a big factor in that. Low vitamin B6, people who have B6 deficiency, people who use cannabis actually raises prolactin. Thyroid issues, all the hormones are so connected. So if you have low thyroid, it can impact your prolactin and your progesterone.
And then so, if your prolactin is super duper high, not to scare you, but there is something called a prolactinoma as well, which is like a benign tumor that can be on the brain on that pituitary gland. So that would probably only be able to be ruled out or diagnosed with an MRI. Mm-hmm. Not like you necessarily, I feel like that's on the rarer side of things, but it's more common than you'd think because they don't really cause problems other than high prolactin, which sometimes is one of the reasons for infertility for some people. Again, absolutely, small percentage. Yeah.
And I typically don't send out for imaging unless prolactin is like 80 to 100 plus. Prolactinomas that are a big problem where it's like you cannot get pregnant unless we actually put you on medication to get this down. I don't see being a problem until we're like 100 plus. Prolactin should be, you know, not at all there, but we see it. Personally, if it's in the 20s or lower, I'm fine with that. If people can get pregnant, a lot of times in women, I see it like 30s, 40s, and we use natural medicine and herbs and all sorts of things to bring that down naturally. So in those situations, I do not think you need to go get imaging because it doesn't change the treatment at any, you know, it doesn't change anything. If it's 100 plus or more, then I'm like, okay, that might be a bigger problem. But I see that way less than the 30 to 50, 60 range of prolactin. Okay, so those are kind of some main hormonal imbalances. And then the next category, so the second category of these eight, is clotting. This is what is really honed in on the conventional medical model. And a lot of times if people have a loss, a lot of people are like, oh, you must have clots. So this is something that a traditional doctor probably will test and rule out, things like antiphospholipid syndrome, inherited clotting issues like factor V laden, prothrombin mutations. There's a bunch of different proteins involved with clotting. So there are many things to test, and this is something that if you have a loss, let's say you're currently pregnant and you know that you're losing the baby, you can test and see if there are clots in the tissues. That is a way to see if clotting is a factor for you before even going down looking at genetics. And if there's not clotting, you know, then that can tell you something else. Not everybody's able to do that, or you might be listening to this years later after a loss or something like that. But know that you can do some genetic testing if you have a strong family history of losses. Like, yes, my cousin, my aunt, my grandma, a lot of people in my family have had miscarriages. That's where I'm thinking, there's maybe something genetic going on, maybe something clotting. It could also be thyroid, you know, like thyroid things can run in families, but definitely looking at that. And these can happen early losses. They can also be later losses. But that's another thing to look at and something that would probably not be as hard to get tested with your conventional doctor.
Okay. So question, when you say that you can test for clots, you mean like they would literally bring in some of the tissue that they passed? They'll call it the products of conception, right? Yeah. But it's like the baby, the placenta, something to do so that they can look in that. And then also they can take little samples from that to check genetics.
Yes. Yeah. So you can check. That's what they call it. Yeah. It's sad. The products of conception. But yeah, at that point, like it's an early loss. I mean, your baby's literally the size of a pinhead, you know? So you're looking at a lot of the other tissues around that and things like that. But if there are clots, the reason why clots cause loss is they block blood flow. So they either stop the blood from coming to where you're getting the nutrients that the baby needs. It can't take away other things. It can cause all sorts of issues. So you can have clots that are getting in the way of the placenta growing, in the way of the embryo growing, and it can just be a problem. And the nice thing is no matter what your genetic issue, a lot of times if you take things like baby aspirin or in some severe cases, especially if you have multiple losses due to clots, some more heavy hitter anti-clotting medications, oftentimes you can go on and have a totally healthy baby. You just need to help manage those clots. So even if you have a genetic issue, it is not a sentence that you can never have a baby on your own. We just need to know it. The key about medicine in general and good medicine is doing a really good job of finding the root cause. Because once you know the root cause, you can be very targeted with that treatment, whether it's natural or conventional. But just being like, I don't know, I had a loss. I'm assuming it's clotting. Let's just put you on baby aspirin. I see that happen all the time. The person has recurrent pregnancy loss. There's no evidence of clotting. They've done genetics. Those are all normal. They've never seen clots, but they're just like, well, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing to just, you know, be proactive and be like, well, let's get on baby aspirin. But let's say it's because of someone's thyroid or because there's some other thing going on. That baby aspirin is not going to help. You know what
I mean? It's just not addressing what is actually going on.
Yeah. So sometimes it is the thing that we need. And absolutely, if that's what helps you have a healthy baby, I'm totally all for it. But that's not always what's going on.
Another quick question, just to clarify in case people are curious. This clotting aspect of recurrent miscarriage or recurrent pregnancy loss, what window of weeks would you say that you see this most often?
I mean, this is why it's so tricky. This can be in the early weeks as well. So, you know, anytime in those either missed miscarriages or in those early weeks up until, you know, 10, 12 weeks, sometimes it can be later though, you know, once the embryo is growing and the demand is greater and those maybe the little clots weren't affecting it when it was younger, like smaller, but then when it gets bigger. So this one is one that could happen at different times, but we do often see it in those early, that first trimester. I mean, this is why the majority of losses happen in the first trimester.
Right. There's so many different factors that could play into this. Okay. So it would almost be, this is my visual brain really wanting a graph that shows colors that are like kind of overlapping with each other of when these things are phased in and out. And I'm sure that that exists. And if it doesn't, we should create it because it would be really interesting to see.
Yeah. We should do that. And I do have a recurrent pregnancy loss guide that you can download. Maybe I'll add that as my like a thing. We could go in on it together too. It'd be like, here's a graph of all the things.
Okay.
So clotting is a thing. So next root cause of our eight is genetic causes. And genetics are things that we get passed down from mom and dad. And there's a couple things that we talk about with genetics. We already kind of mentioned the clotting. So clotting can be genetic. It also cannot be. You know, you can just have clotting issue and no one else in your family has that, or you're the only one that manifests it.
And COVID too. COVID infections do seem to increase the potential of clotting being a factor.
So COVID, both the wild virus and the vaccine, because it's the spike protein that we are finding. The spike protein is on the virus of COVID and is also what is in the vaccine in concentrated amounts. So both of those things we have seen now that enough time has passed are increasing clots. This is why we're seeing so many deaths in young people, deaths in athletes. It's why so many women's periods were weird around COVID and the vaccine, and why there were so many losses. The amount of miscarriages were exponentially higher during COVID, both in those who got the infection and got the vaccine. So it's the spike protein itself that causes a bunch of clotting issues. And this is not only going to cause stroke and heart attack and all these cardiovascular events that we're seeing in people, but also miscarriage. So that's another thing, especially if you're one of those people who lost babies during that time. If you're like, what is going on? Like, I can't figure anything else out. It could have been that.
And I do see that women, even now today, 2025, are, if they do come down with a COVID infection during their pregnancy, are often recommended to take aspirin, which I think is one of those things where it's like, I mean, probably a good reasoning for that.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have robust studies to show that it's actually helping yet, but baby aspirin in pregnancy just in general, and I think we probably will have an entire episode about this at some point, because sometimes it's used to prevent preeclampsia as well.
Yeah.
Is overall, like, the safety of it and the benefit of it outweighs the risk in most cases. Yeah. Yes, there are problems with it. It's not perfect, but like, if it's going to allow the baby to be alive, then, you know, so anyway, okay, let's, sorry, you were moving on to genetics.
Yep. So genetics. So there can be genetics that affect things like the clotting. So like something in the woman. There can also be genetics that affect the embryo. So when we talk about the embryo not being healthy, a lot of times that's a chromosomal issue, chromosomal abnormalities. When mom and dad's sperm and egg come together, the way that those genes kind of were created and manifested weren't exactly normal. And there are certain things, there are certain ways that those genes come together that are not compatible for life. Meaning it doesn't matter what you would have done. You could have the perfect vessel, the perfect body, the perfect hormones. That embryo itself would never survive, right? So that is actually quite common, especially in parents of advanced age. I hate like using that term, but you know, when moms or dads, because genes come from mom and dad or female and male partner, they don't have to be mom and dad, or you know, you call them that, but female and male partner both give genes. So it's not always a female issue, but the chromosomal abnormalities can happen. That is often also these early losses, missed miscarriages in those early, early weeks or early on, but we can also have losses later, even into like the second trimester, that ended up being like something wasn't right with the embryo. And there can be parental karyotype testing that you can do. And then you can also test the embryo itself for those chromosomal abnormalities.
Typically, real quick, are you just, so that if people are like, well, why does this happen? Why did the chromosomal abnormalities happen? Besides just the idea of this like chance, lucky, honestly, every single baby is a miracle, you guys, like for real, the amount of things that happen have to happen perfectly. Like just go to YouTube and type in embryo formation and watch what has to happen in that first like week of them coming together and how many cell divisions happen. And in that process, sometimes there's just things that don't totally work right. And it's, if a huge group of cells has a missing chromosome, an extra one in the wrong spot. Now, obviously we all hear about chromosomal things like with trisomy 21, which is like called Down syndrome, and Down syndrome is compatible with life, but there are a slew of things you have never heard of that are not compatible with life. That's why you've never heard them, because these people don't make it most of the time. There are a few, but it's most of the time it's not compatible. They don't have the ability to live. And so they're usually not even made past the first trimester, but it's kind of crazy how much this can happen in general. And like you said, everything else could be totally fine. It's just that this has split in the wrong way. But, right, this is one of those things that I think is a good place to look into for something like a DNA fragmentation test on the sperm side of things, which I know you're a huge fan of, because if we have weak genetic material going into the pregnancy, like the egg has maybe not is not the best quality, but mostly probably wouldn't you say it's a sperm? Is there any studies that show genetic abnormalities being mostly one or the other, or is it 50-50?
So in this really funny conventional medical world that we live in, the female is often blamed.
Yeah.
However, we are studying it more and more now and finding that some studies are showing 40 to 50% of miscarriage is male factor. So that's huge and no one's talking about it. The female is almost always blamed. And like you said, it takes two to tango. Two people are making this baby and the genetic material comes from both the female and the male. And it's hard to test a female's eggs, like her genes. You just can't really. So really we're looking at more of her body in general. And actually I'll move one of my root causes up and let's just talk about the like gamete quality and overall health. So this
gamete,
is just kind of
meaning egg or sperm for those that don't know what a gamete is.
Sorry. Egg and sperm. So this genetic is going to kind of roll into this because what we see is this intersection between genes and our environment. And this epigenetics, this plays a big role. So outside of just pure genes, meaning the blueprint of your body, they're hard and fast, they're determined, it doesn't matter at all what you've been exposed to, you have inherited this thing. That's classic genetics. Another area of genetics that is very up and coming and being studied more and more, which is exciting, is called epigenetics. And epigenetics is about how the environment that you're exposed to, the health of your body, the foods you eat, the toxins you're exposed to, all of these things will impact whether a gene is turned on or off. So maybe the gene for, you know, having a chromosomal abnormality in your future baby is not ever turned on because you've had this healthy lifestyle or this environment that you've curated that just doesn't allow that to happen. Or vice versa. Maybe, you know, you've been exposed to cigarette smoke for a lot of your life or as a kid, or you don't eat as well as maybe you could, or you're being exposed to a lot of the toxins that are in our day-to-day life, or maybe it's even EMF exposure from Wi-Fi and our computers and electronics. These things increase the likelihood of genes turning on or off. They also increase the likelihood of something going wrong when those egg and sperm come together. So we know fertility is very similar to cancer, in the sense that many things that we know lead to more cancer also affect fertility because they both involve replicating of DNA. Mm-hmm. When we are making things in our body, mistakes are more likely to happen in an unhealthy environment. And if the mistake happens where it turns on the gene or turns on the process of the cells never dying, that's cancer. If it happens where they mess up and they don't grow well, then that causes infertility, right? So, or losses. So in general, we look at the genes, but our environment and our lifestyle really plays even a bigger role than just our genes. And like you mentioned, the DNA fragmentation test, when we're evaluating, is it a genetic thing? Is it an environment genetic thing? Something like a DNA fragmentation test can tell us that. It tells us in real time a man's sperm if the DNA is being compromised in some way. And that is different than being inherited. Like all of these men in my life have this thing. Like that's different. There are those genes for us to look at in men. Like maybe they don't have the proper chromosomes. They have XY or XXY or Turner syndrome or Klinefelter's. These are some classic genetic things that can happen in men that can lead to fertility stuff, and those are easy to test. DNA fragmentation is telling us a little bit more about that epigenetic picture. How is the environment affecting your sperm? And it's something we can improve.
Yeah.
So if you do a DNA fragmentation test and it's high, the first thing I do is look at what's going on in your environment. what kind of foods you're eating, what kind of toxins you're being exposed to. Are you smoking? Are you drinking excessively? Are you having tons of Wi-Fi exposure? These are all things that we know break down DNA. And that will then contribute to pregnancy loss. It's really sad.
And it's really hopeful in that sperm are easy to influence in a negative or a positive way. So even if this is happening right now with your partner or in your family, it's like, what a blessing to know that. And now we can make some changes to improve it. And if you were to go retest after at least 3 to 4 months of really heavy lifestyle living changes, you'll likely see a really good shift and change in that DNA fragmentation test. Now, eggs are not, like you said, we don't just like suck out eggs of women and test them in that way. So it's so ridiculous and silly that we have not been testing every single man's sperm, which is like the easiest thing to get ever. And it's just, I know that's like your soapbox for life. And I love it because it is, it's so crazy and illogical the way that things have been happening. But so anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because I think it's important to understand. And so thanks for explaining all of that stuff of how and why we are such big advocates for healthy lifestyle, for all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But it goes down and it permeates all of the layers from like our hormones and then the anatomy of things and then whether the genes are turned on and off. Like it's not just, oh, are you recessive or dominant in this? Like that is, we're talking on like a level that science is just now understanding too, but it's very, very real. So anyway, thanks.
Yeah, I love that. So yeah, this is our fourth root cause that I'm talking about, which is our environment, the quality of our eggs and our sperm, which comes more from our environment. So that can be from toxins, like I've mentioned. And one test that you can do to see functionally if your body is having a hard time with toxins or is having a hard time making DNA properly, especially if you're a woman, but both men and women, is looking at a test called homocysteine. So homocysteine tells us functionally in the body if you are not able to methylate very well. And that's just a fancy way of saying, can you put a hat on this vitamin so it can do its job? I think of it like a hard hat. It's like this vitamin needs this hard hat to go do its job. If it doesn't have this, it can't do it. If it's not methylated, it can't do it. It can't make DNA and it can't help you detox and get rid of toxins. If homocysteine is high, that could be another sign for you personally that you need more nutritional support, more methylation support. So when people say take methyl B12 or methylfolate in your vitamin or your prenatal, that's what we're talking about. And if you have a high homocysteine, that's absolutely what you need, is that methylation support. It could also mean that you're being exposed to so many toxins that your body's having a hard time handling that. So that's where maybe doing toxicity testing is important. And all of this is available in Womanhood Wellness, and you have resources too. But if you join Womanhood Wellness, you can get access to testing all of these things. And that plays a big role, as well as diet, right? So toxins are a big thing. Diet is a big thing. Not only the types of foods we eat, as opposed, like meaning anti-inflammatory type foods, whole foods that have lots of nutrients, but also specific vitamins and minerals in pregnancy loss, specifically folate. And another sort of genetic epigenetic marker that's important is called MTHFR. And that stands for a big long thing that I won't bore you with unless you want me to say it, because I do say it quite a bit.
Go ahead, say it.
Methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase. There you go. Some people call it the I'm not going to say it because it's a podcast, something gene. But anyways, about 40% of the population have a genetic factor that makes it hard for this to work. And what this is doing is methylating B vitamins. So this is putting the hard hat on the vitamins so they can do their job. If you can't do that very well, because you have an MTHFR mutation, then you are someone who absolutely needs to be taking methyl vitamins, taking the vitamin that already has the hard hat on. It already is methylated. It's already active to do its job. So methylfolate is important. And you are a person who taking folic acid, the traditional way that we tell people to take folate, is not a good fit for you because you cannot utilize it and it builds up in your body and it's not ideal. So that's another thing you can check on a panel for assessing recurrent pregnancy loss is MTHFR mutation and homocysteine. Other things like B12, taking methyl B12 is important. Vitamin D is important. Omega-3s, choline, some of these nutrients, if you're deficient in them, could lead to loss. I mean, I've seen women who've had a miscarriage just getting on a good prenatal, like needed, with methylated Bs and all the nutrients that they need, go on to have a healthy baby because that's all they needed. They literally just needed the nutrients in the right forms.
Yeah. I just wanted to echo something about homocysteine really quick, because in case your doctor doesn't know what to do with that lab or won't run it, you can get it done yourself at ultralabtest.com, which we'll have linked to the show notes. But what would you say you like it to be below?
Yeah.
Like 9, 8?
Yeah, 8 or 9 would be ideal. Anything above 9, we're starting to see that there is a problem. And just to throw it out there, this is what took my husband down that route, is when I was able to actually run his labs myself, I ran his homocysteine and his was like 23, which I know you guys don't have a reference for, but that's so high.
Wow.
That's so high.
And that's the highest I've ever even heard of.
Yeah, it's crazy. No wonder he has no sperm, you know, but it also tells me he doesn't methylate well. He had a lot of toxin exposure and, you know, that led us down this whole path. But I'm just saying that's a big deal. But even in like 12, 13, 14, 15, I see that a lot. And sometimes that is genetic because of this MTHFR thing. So it can run in families. And it's just something important to check, even more so, I think, than the MTHFR mutation, if you had to pick one, because it tells you what's happening in your body right now.
Right, like the function of it. How is it actually manifesting? Whereas just knowing whether or not you have the gene might not be as helpful. But yeah, I agree that if I could just pick one. And I feel like MTHFR testing is quite expensive too. Sometimes it can be like over $100, just that one marker, where I think a homocysteine in general is maybe like in the $20 to $50 range, something like that. And it's much more useful information if you had to just pick one.
Yeah, love that. Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. There are so many factors that impact egg quality. Stress, toxins, and energy issues are just a few. Stress and toxins increase oxidative damage that negatively impact your eggs, and eggs need adequate mitochondrial energy to mature properly. It's so important to support your eggs no matter where you are along your fertility journey. I personally love Needed's egg support product to do just that. I helped design this formula, so I obviously love it, but even if I hadn't, it would be the one I would recommend to my patients and clients. This formula is an antioxidant and mitochondrial powerhouse that supports oxidative damage and the energy powerhouses, mitochondria. It has key ingredients like L-carnitine, green tea extract, PQQ, and ALA. I love pairing it with Needed's prenatal to get your essential nutrients, as well as their CoQ10 for an antioxidant boost. Visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER at checkout to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, now back to the show. Okay, I'm just reorganizing.
I kind of regrouped your...
Oh,
I'm sorry. I didn't move any chunks of notes around, but I relabeled them. So 4 was nutrition and toxins, right?
Yes, but also poor egg and sperm quality. It was just like that wrapped into one whole thing.
Okay, yeah, got it.
And then anatomical is 6. That's okay. Or 5. I'm sorry.
Anatomical is 5. Okay, cool.
That's okay. So the next thing that we're going to talk about is anatomical issues. So anatomical means structure. And this is probably an easier one to rule out, especially in recurrent pregnancy loss, because if you've had one loss, you've probably had like an ultrasound to look at what's going on, but not always. So things like a uterus that's shaped different than it should be, like a heart-shaped uterus, or a septum, meaning like a line of tissue through your uterus. You can have fibroids, which are growths that can happen inside the uterus, on the inner lining, on the inside, like of the meat of the uterus. Typically, ones on the outside of the uterus don't impact fertility, but they can if they're really large. Like some women have fibroids the size of grapefruits and they're pushing, you know, their uterus. So if baby happens to implant in that area, it's not gonna work, especially maybe when they're growing bigger. So maybe the baby can make it past the first trimester, maybe even into the second, but then the baby gets growth restriction or some issue because of a big fibroid. There can be adhesion. So if you've ever had a surgery or scar tissue, if you've had a previous C-section, this is another thing I learned with my own C-section, depending on how that scar healed, if the embryo is trying to implant near that scar tissue, it can just, you can be losing the baby because there's a bunch of adhesions and scar tissue. Even people who've had IUDs, some women who've had IUDs will develop adhesions and scar tissue from something like that. Or if they've had cervical cancer or different things like LEAP procedures in their cervix, sometimes that can cause problems. That's more with birth though, because it's in the cervix. But one thing that has to do with the cervix, which for those who don't know, if the opening of the vagina is like, there's a tube, which is the vagina, and then up above the vagina is the cervix. It's like a little donut. And then up above the cervix is the uterus, like a balloon. So you can imagine like the tip of a balloon, you know, that you blow on to blow up, that hard tissue that is holding that balloon is kind of like the cervix. And there can be something called cervical insufficiency. And this happens in late term losses. So if you're a person who's like, I've had like three losses in the late second trimester, you definitely want to be looking at cervical insufficiency. And that basically means that the cervix can't stay closed. So the baby, you lose the baby. It's imagine it kind of falling out of an open balloon. And this is something that is devastating and so sad, and also something that if you know you can catch, and they basically sew up the cervix to hold baby in there. And for some women who have this, it can just happen over and over again. Like that's their thing. And so if they've lost one baby that way, then like all their babies might have that issue. So it's something to definitely look into. And I've seen people who've had this like two or three times and no one's caught it and no one's helped them. And that's
that just is fun. Almost like that should be malpractice. That's just negligence. You know. You're not looking at the person in front of you. That like, that should never happen. If it happens once, if someone, because it's so rare to lose a baby in the second or third trimester. And so all things should be ruled out. And if she's going into like a preterm labor situation, any subsequent pregnancies should be monitored very closely for cervical opening, dilation, effacement, anything that's happening. And to put a couple stitches into the cervix and keep it closed until the end of pregnancy is potentially all it would have taken to have a baby in your arms. Like, oh,
it's so sad. And it's honestly, I'm shocked by it a lot. And this isn't to like bash conventional medicine. I know I probably come off that way sometimes in my talking.
Well, no, you're just highlighting that there are problems, and that's literally like our profession is to fill in those gaps.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not like the doctor's fault a lot of the time. I remember the first time I went to a traditional OB-GYN clinic because I'm so used to naturopathic medicine and we get treated so well and you have so much time and they sit with you for an hour and look you in the eye and it's just like so different. And I went to just like a normal clinic to get a pap and I was shocked. I mean, like the amount of people in the waiting room, the chaos, the woman who came in literally never looked at me. She never looked at my face.
Yeah, it's like you're a robot.
My legs were open. She like did the thing. She never looked at me. And I was like, this is crazy. It's like, of course, you know, in certain situations, things are missed. I mean, even for us who spend hours and hours of time, you know, it can be hard. So I get it. And that's also not an excuse for us having an epidemic of 1 in 4 women losing babies. And it's just, you know, it's sad. So speaking of the next category, this would be 6, would be immune stuff. Okay, so we've talked about hormones, we've talked about genetics, we've talked about anatomical stuff and our lifestyle and our environment. And lifestyle and environment plays a role in all of these. I just want to highlight that, but these are like overarching chunks. The immune system is a part of our body that keeps us safe from invaders, bad guys, bugs, bacteria, viruses. It's a good thing. And sometimes things can go wrong with it for certain reasons. One of those is called autoimmunity. Autoimmunity is where the body is mistakenly attacking your tissue. I don't really like to say that people who are experiencing autoimmunity, that their body has turned on themselves and that it's attacking itself, like it's not smart and it's doing that. In our experience, a lot of times autoimmunity is self-tissue is sort of the collateral damage in an immune system that's trying to handle something chronic. So something in the system that it's trying to get at, maybe a chronic virus like Epstein-Barr virus or a chronic toxin infection like mold or an allergy or a food problem that it's reacting to something or a gut problem, and the immune system's on high alert. You know, it's like being in a castle. You know, because we read our romanticy books, and it's like they know that they're being attacked, and so the guards are on high alert, and maybe like this little child is walking down the hall and they're like, oh my God, get her, you know? And it's right, like right. The child is not the problem. Just, everything's on high alert because they know there's something amiss, and they're just like, anything could be bad. So we're going to like take this child into custody when that's your thyroid or that's your joints or whatever. So your self tissue has been tagged as bad and foreign when it shouldn't have been. And so some common autoimmune conditions that can lead to losses are Hashimoto's. This is thyroid autoimmunity. It causes low thyroid. ANA is a marker that you can test, anti-nuclear antigen. It's sort of a screening marker to basically say, has the body developed something that is not right with the immune system and your self tissue? It's just a screen. If a positive ANA is high, it does not mean that you absolutely have an autoimmune condition, but it means that there's something not quite right with your immune system, and it could be that you have an autoimmune condition. And so we'd always want to follow that up with some more tests and see what else is going on. You can have things like lupus and Sjogren's and rheumatoid arthritis and a bunch of other autoimmune conditions that could be present, and they could lead to losses. Lupus is a common one. And these are panels, again, that if you've had multiple losses, a conventional doctor should be running an ANA and stuff. But again, I see this not happen. Or let's say you've had one loss. Given your family history and just your history in general, it might be wise to just do an ANA to just rule it out and then follow up with that. And definitely looking at your thyroid and all of those. The other thing that can happen is infections.
Wait, real quick. Can you do antiphospholipid?
Oh, yes. Antiphospholipid antibodies. Yes. Okay. That was another one that I missed. So antiphospholipid antibodies are another things in that category of just further investigation to figure out what's going on. Anticardiolipin, beta-2 glycoproteins, these are very big words that you don't necessarily need to know, just a good autoimmune panel. You know, you might have to work with an immunologist. If you're working with someone like a functional medicine or naturopathic doctor, we would just run these. But, you know, asking your doctor to rule out autoimmune causes is important.
And that would be one to the APA or antiphospholipid syndrome potentially would be or APS, I guess, and then with APA antibodies would be one where daily aspirin can be part of the treatment plan as well. So It's not necessarily always just genetic clotting factors or even, oh, I had COVID in my first trimester or I had COVID right before I got pregnant, something like that. It could be also this autoimmune because what it does is causes clots, one of the things that it can do.
Yes,
so exactly. Just so you guys know, you're familiar with that in case that has been part of your history or it's being suggested to you, that's a thing.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to mention, it's not on our outline, Dr. Morgan, is sometimes this is more for fertility, but it can happen with loss as well. Sometimes the body can actually develop antibodies toward your partner's sperm or egg. Yeah. And you can also have antibodies toward the embryo itself. So sometimes there can be immune stuff where you're attacking. So you can actually test for anti-sperm antibodies. Sometimes that's in the man. The man has made antibodies toward his own sperm. Or sometimes it's in the female. The female has made antibodies toward her partner's sperm. And so that would never usually allow pregnancy to happen. So that would be more in an infertility case. But it can also happen where the body can like kind of attack the embryo. So the immune system can kind of be funny in lots of touch points. It could be that you have Hashimoto's, which is your thyroid, that's not directly attacking the embryo. And if you could just calm the antibodies down and make sure you have enough thyroid hormone, you can have a healthy baby. Sometimes the immune system is actually creating an environment where you're attacking the things that are trying to get you pregnant.
And on that point, one of those, because I've been talking about this a lot on Instagram, is because, well, what's your blood type? Do you know your blood type?
Yes, I'm AB positive.
Okay, so you're positive. So I am negative. I'm an O negative. So this is a real quick like Rogam conversation about being a rhesus negative, Rh negative. So something negative, A negative, B negative, AB negative, O negative, where the sperm, whether that's if it's known or I mean, sorry, if it's a known positive or unknown, maybe, I don't know, you know, whatever, however it might be unknown, or maybe just they haven't had a chance to check what dad is. This is a situation where in your pregnancy and then you're in your postpartum, you will be offered something called Rogam, which is called anti-D, and it's an injection. It's not a vaccine, but it's an immunoglobulin injection that prevents you from making antibodies to a positive baby. Because you as the mother, the vessel carrying a baby, if you have a negative blood type, what that means is that you kind of don't have this little antigen marker on your red blood cells. And if your partner or the sperm is positive, then there's a potential that the baby could be positive. If your partner is negative, then this does not matter. And if you are positive, like you are, Leah, then mm-hmm. it doesn't matter either. It's only in the situation that it matters where the mom is negative and the dad or the partner, whatever, sperm is positive, because now the baby could be positive. And right. so what can happen is that during the pregnancy, if there is any blood mixing, mom's body can see this antigen from the fetal blood cells and make antibodies to it. It mm-hmm. usually does not affect that current pregnancy. It would affect future pregnancies. So what is offered is this injection that does a very, very good job at what it does, which is to prevent that process from happening. So now if you are somebody who maybe didn't know the blood type of yourself, your partner, your care provider, somehow this slipped through the cracks, like something's going on, you don't know what, maybe you had a miscarriage and nobody ever tested and they weren't really sure what was happening, and now you're continuing to have more miscarriages, it is a good idea to, it's such a simple test to figure out what both you and partner are. And if you are O negative, or not O negative, you don't have to be O negative, but if you have a negative rhesus factor, your partner has a positive rhesus factor, you can get something called an indirect antiglobulin test, or sometimes it's called an indirect Coombs test. This is like a, it just checks the titers in your blood to see, are you making antibodies to Rh positive blood? Because it is, it's not common, but it is one of those things where, like, especially back in the day, you know, you hear women who are like great grandma age at this point, and it's like, oh my God, yeah, she had like 27 pregnancies and like only nine of them made it.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, how could that happen? What is even happening in that? It's like, probably, maybe she was sensitized. And so her body kept attacking her babies. And it's a preventable thing. It's something that I've had to deal with mine, because I am negative and my husband is positive. So anyway, I just wanted to kind of like explain that a little bit more, because it is a confusing topic. But again, it only matters in the case where you as the woman are of a negative blood type and then the sperm is of a positive blood type. That's the only situation. There's lots of other ways and combinations, but those ones don't matter. It's only in that situation, and you can test and see. So like for me specifically, because I did not get Rogam after my fourth baby was born, because I thought she was going to be the last one. And so I just checked her blood type and she's positive. So there is a potential that if her blood got mixed into my body at some point during the pregnancy or during the birth, I could now be making antibodies towards Rh positive blood. I think probably since all of my children are Rh positive, the chances of my future children, if I ever have any more, would also be Rh positive is high. So in my situation, if we decide to have any more kids, I am going to go get this test done so that I can see, have I made any, you know, because I didn't get the Rogam after this last one because I thought she was the last. Okay. Anyway, that's my aside. I love
that. That's another example of immune system. That's an immune system thing that can lead to a loss. And I love that. Well, the whole, yeah, I was pregnant 27 times and she had nine. It's like, yeah, the ones that survived were probably potentially the other ones
blood type. Yeah. Right.
Positive. Yeah. So interesting. So that leads us to,
infections. Yeah.
So infections. So different than Rogam, which is more like self or attacking something else, like your body's making it, thinking that your baby's going to hurt you. I don't know. It's like so funny that we even do that. But infections, like you could get a vaginal infections, you can have endometriitis, you can have stuff going on like STDs, Torch syndrome, these kind of things that can lead to losses as well, which I'll just mention. I'll be talking about the microbiome in a second, but I want to wrap up the immune system. Histamine and mast cells. So this is a part of the immune system that deals with allergies. So if you've ever been exposed to pollen or grasses or whatever, and you get itchy eyes, runny nose, these are histamines, and elevated histamines can affect implantation. and the development of the baby. So if you are someone who deals with a lot of allergies or have a lot of allergies in the family, that might be another thing to look at and try to figure out how to support that. DAO is a really beautiful enzyme that helps break down histamine. You might not make enough of that yourself. And then the last thing is natural killer cells and just the cytokine balance inside of the uterus. These are other aspects of the immune system. This is also potentially where COVID played a role in loss, not only in clotting, but we are finding that COVID, the vaccine, and the virus causes a lot of issues with our natural killer cells. And it's why we're seeing a lot of cancer post-COVID as well, because COVID can do certain things with the natural killer cells, not helping us to kill cancer. And that's a whole other podcast for another time. But natural killer cells in general are parts of the immune system that actually do the killing. So antibodies tag tissue and say, you're good or bad. The killer cells are what actually do the killing. And if there's a problem in your uterus, it's like a battleground, and the embryo is not going to survive in a battleground. And that leads us into number 7 of the root causes, which is the microbiome. So you're saying, why would I have natural killer cell problems or inflammation or any of this stuff going on in the uterus? A lot of times it comes down to the microbiome. The microbiome are the bacteria, viruses, parasites, all the different critters, creatures that live in and on our body. We are 10 times more bacteria than human cell per cell. And so if there are problems in the microbiome, aka not so good bacteria, opportunistic infections, classic infections like STDs. An STD is a classic infection. You go to your normal doctor, they would recognize and test and be like, yep, you have chlamydia, you have gonorrhea, you have, you know, these classic infections. However, we know, studying the microbiome, that there can be stuff called dysbiosis, which means that there are more not so good bacteria than good bacteria. It's not a classic infection. You wouldn't go to your doctor and get tested and be like, yep, you for sure have an infection. They'd be like, you're normal. But the types of bacteria that are in your vagina or your uterus are not healthy. And that can create an environment of inflammation and an environment of these immune system things that are going on, because maybe your immune system's trying to get rid of these bad bacteria, or maybe you have some sort of virus there, or there's something going on trying to create balance, and instead it's just a battleground. And that is a very much functional naturopathic root cause of loss that needs to be looked at. And the cool thing is you can test your vaginal and or uterine microbiome to see if it's healthy. We're supposed to have lots of good lactobacillus species in our vagina, in particular lactobacillus reuteri, rhamnosus, and some people will have acidophilus, which is the classic bacteria that's in yogurt, but more than anything, it is, oh my gosh.
Crispatus.
Yes, crispatus. Oh my gosh. I always think of cereal.
I think of crispy chicken, like crispy.
Oh my God, I'm like Rice Krispies. Yeah, Lactobacillus crispatus is a really important one. And you can actually, Seed is a company that makes a vaginal probiotic with crispatus before it was really hard to actually get. But you can actually do a test. We'll put a link in the show notes. Fertilisys is one that will check the vagina and the uterus. There's ones that you can do with fertility doctors, but you can do a bunch of them on your own. Evi, JunoBio. There's a couple different ones. But Fertilisys is a Greek company, and they are specializing in recurrent pregnancy loss and unexplained infertility. So I think they're a really good option to look at. And then that leads me into the last main overarching root cause, which is another reason why all these things matter, which is inflammation. So microbiome issues in the gut, in the vagina, in the uterus, immune system problems, they can lead to inflammation. Inflammation, again, is like the body's on fire on the inside. It's upset for some reason. Inflammation helps heal. If we cut our leg and we have a need for healing, it's going to become inflamed, because that's a good thing. It helps us to heal. What is not a good thing is chronic inflammation. Chronic inflammation is where your body is upset and it's having cytokines, which are kind of the chemicals that deal with inflammation, all the time. And it creates an inhospitable environment for baby. So inflammation can be happening systemically, so in the whole body. And you can run tests like HSCRP. It's a test I run on everybody to see what's going on with inflammation. ESR is another one that you can do, a sedimentation rate. But in particular, if you have inflammation in your vagina, in your uterus, in the endometrium, which is the lining of your uterus, then it's going to be really hard for that baby to either implant or continue to grow. And why do you have inflammation? A lot of it comes down to all the things we talked about. Immune system stuff, microbiome stuff, toxins.
Stress.
I mean, inflammation, food, the types of food you're eating. I mean, that just wraps up all the things. So at the end of the day, it sounds like there's a lot of factors. There are. And the cool thing is you can really impact almost all of them outside of maybe like anatomical and some genetic stuff that are a little bit harder, but you can impact almost all of them. Hormones, the quality of sperm and egg, the microbiome, inflammation, immune system, all of that by digging deep, finding the root cause like we talked about and working on your lifestyle from this more holistic perspective. It's really amazing how the body responds in such a beautiful way and how if you can learn how to create this environment for the baby to thrive, then you know the natural state of the body is to have that healthy baby. We just need to find out what's blocking it and give the body what it needs to thrive. And I'm not saying it's that easy. I understand people have had terrible losses and we can't always find the answer, like I said, but I think there's a lot more to look at than what women are given in the conventional model.
Yeah, 100%. And just to give like a quick little rundown of the way that all of this is connected, because this is like naturopathic medicine 101. It's like the coolest thing. It's like our favorite. It's why we became doctors, because it's like you're a detective and you're trying to figure out a case and it's putting together all these puzzle pieces. But it's so let's just say that you live an okay lifestyle. You eat sort of like healthier than the standard American diet. And this is something that's going on for you, or even not. Let's just take like a person who's not even trying to get pregnant right now, but they are eating something continually that is causing problems in their body. Let's just say that they're gluten sensitive and they don't even know it. Like I just found out that I am. Okay. And when I say that I didn't know it, it's because I don't have like stomach aches. I don't have cramping, indigestions, whatever. But my body on a molecular level, on an antibody level, is not loving it. And that is partially genetic for me because I have a family history of a lot of autoimmune diseases. My grandpa did have celiac disease. My uncle has celiac disease. My mom probably does. She can't even do the test because she's so sensitive. So anyway, I have actually gotten tested for celiac specifically and it was negative. But let's just say I went on for the whole rest of my life eating gluten, which I'm going to have to stop, which is so sad, but whatever. I'll be like you. We can be gluten-free together.
Yes. I make good gluten-free cookies. Don't worry.
Yeah, exactly. We'll figure out all the good recipes and we'll share them with you. So if I just continue to eat gluten, every single time I ate gluten, my stomach lining in my body is having a reaction because my immune system is triggered and is causing inflammation. Now I'm going to wrap up all of these words in one example. Okay. So my body is creating inflammation and my immune system is triggered. This over time, if it continues, is going to change my microbiome. It is also going to change my absorption of nutrients. The microbiome is inherently connected to hormone production as well. And if we have poor nutrient absorption, inflammation, and a microbiome that's off, our hormones are now off. Whether that's your thyroid, your estrogen, progesterone, your cycle is different and changed. Whatever it is, like just that one example. Like, so can we see how this is so all full body? And that's why we keep talking about like what it is that you eat and what you're exposed to and everything. Like you said, outside of just hardcore genetics or anatomical, you know, you have a septate uterus. Okay. Mm-hmm. We can't change that with lifestyle. You could go and you can have a surgery and have the septum removed or whatever. But like, we're talking in a general sense, probably my egg quality is going to be low because I am chronically inflamed in all sorts of different ways. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not going to be absorbing everything. So all of my issues are exacerbated. And then it's kind of this self-fulfilling, it's like a hamster on a wheel and it just all unravels. And then now these, you know, this is how chronic disease happens. Mm-hmm. And that's just like one example. There's a million of different ways that this can be happening. So it's not always that we're lacking something. Often it's that people have habits that they're doing that mm-hmm. They're blocking them from health because they're constantly causing problems to their system. And, you know, whether they have symptoms or not, or maybe they've just been normalized to think that it's just like normal. Oh, I'm just in my 30s now. I'm just crying all the time. Like, you know, I'm super tired all the time. Yeah. It's totally normal for me to drink 2 glasses of wine every single night. It's not normal, actually. It's really not mm-hmm. normal. And it is causing problems for your body. And like, it is not a shaming thing. It's also not okay to just chronically be 80 pounds overweight. Mm-hmm. Like that is not, if we're trying to talk about health, I mean, I guess you can do whatever you want, but if we are actually talking about health sense, there is things that are hard yeses or nos that the medical community would agree on. Right. And so anyway, I just wanted to, it's also not okay to be undernourished and underweight, like similarly in that same vein. And like you had mentioned earlier about being undernourished, I think that that's a concept that's hard for Americans to understand because there is so much obesity in this country. And I would I would venture to guess that there is a huge chunk of our obese Americans who are undernourished because 100%. It's from a nutrient density perspective. And so, yes, there is excess body fat. That doesn't mean that they are like overflowing gardens of nutrients. It just means that it's converted into this long storage form of, you know, energy. That's all it is if you wanted to think about it like that. So anyway, long story short, I just had to like in my mind, I saw this example and I wanted to lay it out there for people who are feeling like it's hard to make these choices or how does that actually matter? How does this actually happen? No, that only happens to super sick people. No. You guys, this is happening like all the time. This is why our chronic disease is higher than ever. This is why our fertility is lower than ever. And it's like, we just have to take the reins and pull up your bootstraps and make these changes and really do it. And it does affect the entire body, the entire system. You'll feel better. Maybe you'll be able to carry that baby to term, et cetera.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm going to end on two notes on that. I love what you said about that. And also think about, you know, your husband, I think, has pretty strong sperm. But imagine your situation. You've had miscarriages almost, you know, a couple between kids. And imagine you, if you had partnered with a man who had really low testosterone and suboptimal sperm, mm-hmm. you know, it could be that both of you are just a little bit suboptimal. You know, you have this pattern of maybe gluten has been affecting you. You have some inflammation, maybe not like the most amazing hormonal picture. And he also has this thing. And so it's not even that either one has to be super sick or super off. If both have some issues, it can just lead to like every time it's like there's something just not quite right. And I'm going to caveat that with anyone who's had a loss, it's not your fault in the sense that like you did this, you did something wrong. I know there can be a lot of shame that comes with loss. And, you know, I've lost babies in the IVF sense. It's different. But it's like, is it because I went to that hotel that had mold? Is it because I like went on that trip and I sat for that long? You know, it's like we kill ourselves with like, what did I do that like caused this to happen? And it's a really hard line because I don't want you to sit there in shame and be like, I did this. And that's not what we're trying to say. And we need to talk about the things that we need to be aware of to potentially prevent it. So there's both and that it's mm-hmm. like, this is not your fault. You did not do this because you ate bread. And you might be a person who is having some chronic inflammation and microbiome issues because gluten's not working really well with your body. So it's like really hard because
– right. Well, it's not intentional. It's like no one is doing these things intentionally to lose their babies. And so if it's a lack of I just didn't know, it's so sad and it's so frustrating. That's what I see so much in the postpartum and the birth world, breastfeeding world. But that's literally the whole point of this podcast, right? Is trying to get the information out there that we do think is going to help people have less suffering and healthier, happier lives and more joy in motherhood and all of the different things. Because how could you possibly know all this? Like, unless this is literally your job, but that's why we're trying to lay it out for you. So I'm glad that you brought that up, though, because I didn't mean to come off shamey if I did.
Important. It's important to talk about it.
It is. But you're right. It is. It's both and. It's like we do need to know that our choices matter and like you weren't causing it because you were careless and negligent. And it's like there is just things that were going on that you didn't know. And obviously everyone knows that in your heart you wouldn't have made, you know, you wouldn't have done this on purpose. And so I think hopefully we can just like release any shame around it and in wondering. But I'm sure when it's recurrent too is just like maddening, this idea of why does this keep happening. And I'm just so sorry if that's part of your guys' pictures.
Yeah. So definitely check out the resources that we have if you want to find out how to do testing or learn how to change your microbiome or your inflammatory patterns or any of that kind of stuff. We have resources for you. So check out all of those links in the show notes. And thank you for listening.
Pregnancy loss can be devastating, heart-wrenching, and confusing. Many women and couples are left in the dark wondering what to do next. They aren't sure what steps they should take, how to process the grief, or what avenues of health they should explore before trying again. As I have been helping women and couples for many years in private practice and through my online programs, I received many requests for more information on pregnancy loss. This is a big reason why we did this podcast episode, and it's also why I finally made my pregnancy loss guide. This 11-page clickable resource guides you through the different aspects to consider and look into after experiencing a miscarriage. I imagined one of my patients asking, "What do I need to know and do now?" And that was how this guide was created. Throughout the guide, I also share what additional support you can obtain through experts in the field, as well as my own course offerings. Everything was created to support women and couples just like you. If you want to get access to my guide, head to www.womanhoodwellness.com/loss. Again, that's www.womanhoodwellness.com/loss. I hope this serves as a beacon of hope and a useful support along your fertility journey. Sending my love as always.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.